Hey, this is Mike Cashew, and you're listening to the Brute Strength Podcast. This week, I'm back for round two with Chrissy Mae Cagney, owner of Donuts and Deadlifts, LO Supply Co., author of Flexible Dieting and Flexible Dieting 2.0, as well as the owner of Black Iron Gym in Reno, Nevada. We started out the show talking about her recent decision to become a vegan and what went behind that decision, what health benefits she sees, what challenges she sees, and how she's overcoming them. We also talk about her crazy success in business and everything that she attributes that to. Before we get started, if you're a regular listener of this show and you haven't done so already, please head to iTunes and leave me a quick review. Enjoy the show. Hey, this is Mike Cashew, and you're listening to the Brute Strength Podcast. I'm back with Chrissy Mae Cagney, owner of Donuts and Deadlifts. What's your new apparel brand?
LO Supply Co.
LO Supply Co., author of Flexible Dieting and Flexible Dieting 2.0. Chrissy, you're one of the busiest people I know. Thank you so much for making some time to do this for me.
No problem, of course.
So you're vegan now. Which yes. is crazy. What went into that decision? Why?
Well, basically about a year and a half ago, I made the mistake of watching all those documentaries. And I understand that those were made for a purpose, and I understand that's kind of only one side of things. But basically, after just seeing, like, you know, mass farming and all that type of stuff and how animals are treated, I just got very sad. So I switched to pescatarian. Well, first I tried to buy all my meat responsibly and locally, and I had a very weird experience with that. I went out to pick my meat up from this ranch, mm-hmm. and when I got there, the woman told me I could go out and thank the cows for their sacrifice.
Holy shit.
It was very weird, and I got so sad. Like, I could, I don't know. It was so basically I just got sad eating meat, so I switched to pescatarian, and I did that for about 7 months. And then I went up to Portland, Oregon to see Andy Hurley and all those guys who were all, you know, mm-hmm. hard vegans. And after hanging out with them for a bit and, you know, they how easy they made it look, I decided to make the switch. So the first, like, 60 or 90 days, I was, like, really strict with it, really, really strict. And then traveling is very hard. Mm-hmm. So it's been one of those things where when I travel, it turns into more of a vegetarian type thing, okay. because I promised myself I'd never sacrifice, like, my health or well-being to accommodate a vegan lifestyle.
Right. So it was more of a moral thing than health or entirely moral.
It was entirely moral. Yeah.
Okay. And so yeah, keep going.
I knew with my health conditions that I have, there would be a downfall to it. For example, I have to really watch my sodium intake. And when you switch to eating, like, you know, all those fake meats and all that type of stuff, or like the burgers and all that, all those vegan things, they're super, super high in sodium. So that's been a huge hurdle. Mm-hmm. And then also, your liver needs cholesterol to produce bile. And when you go to a vegan diet, no cholesterol, because you're not eating any animal products. So that's kind of been something I've struggled with as well.
So I definitely want to get into some of those challenges. But first, mm-hmm. what are some of the health benefits that, because I'm sure you're very intellectual. And I know that you've done a lot of the research. Mm-hmm. What are some of the health benefits of this kind of diet that you think that you found? And what do you think people that aren't necessarily even on a vegan vegan diet can benefit that you've learned?
I did notice at first my digestion was incredibly improved. My body, personally for me, my body's never liked to break down meat or protein. I've always had really bad indigestion whenever I've eaten things like steak and chicken and all that. So that just kind of went for me, and that's been the main health benefit. I lost a lot of, like, weight unintentionally, which was another thing, but I don't think that's something that's kind of like across the board for everybody, because another thing that when people switch to veganism that tends to happen is they have a hard time getting protein in, mm-hmm. and people automatically start to eat more carbs and fat by default because it's easier as a vegan to get your carbs and fat in opposed to your protein. So I've seen it go both ways. I've got a lot of vegan clients now, and I'm still really new to this. I mean, it hasn't even been a year, So, yeah, I think it just comes down to really fine-tuning it and stuff for the individual. But as far as health concern, I just started eating a lot more vegetables when I made the switch. And, I mean, I thought I ate a lot before, but now I'm really eating a ton. And I just feel better. My energy's better. I'm sleeping better. All types of stuff like that.
How important is the – so I was a raw vegan for like 6 months before I started CrossFit. And so, and I was 100% uneducated about it. And it was one of the most miserable points in my life because I was so hungry all the time. But the, like how at different times I would feel so full of energy, and I associate some of it with eating so much raw vegetables. Right. So how important is the form, or how important is the way that we eat different foods? In terms of heating them and preparing them.
Just the variety and all that stuff. I know that for our bodies, it's easier to digest warm food. That's a digestion thing. But as far as eating like raw vegetables and stuff, I think I gather that a lot of people don't like raw vegetables. Mm-hmm. So I think it just, again, comes down to the individual. There's been a lot of studies shown that actually heating your vegetables doesn't denature them or decrease the ketone. So I've got dogs destroying things, heating up. And there's been studies because, you know, Pete, there for a long time, especially in like the bodybuilding world and stuff, there was that rumor going around that once you heat up vegetables, it completely denatures them and you lose like, you know, half the micronutrients and stuff. And Harvard actually did a study that showed that wasn't true. So I think that's another thing too, is people just being aware of where you get your information from and doing your own research, because it'd be really easy for one person to say to people, you know, someone like credible who might not exactly know what they're talking about, but maybe they have a large social media following or something, saying something like, hey, don't, you know, you should be eating more raw veggies because the assimilation and nutrition, all that stuff, higher micronutrient profile. But again, that's, I found in my own research that proved to not be true. So I'm on the fence with the raw veggie, cooked veggie thing. Again, I think it comes down to the person, because one thing we always try to preach with our nutrition clients and nutrition is, I never want anyone to be miserable. And if somebody hates raw vegetables, I'm never going to try to make them eat raw vegetables. Mm-hmm. So again, I think it, you know, kind of comes down to the person. I haven't dove into raw veganism at all whatsoever yet, because I'm still trying to like nail down what I'm doing. So that's not something I'm incredibly well versed on quite yet, but that's definitely something I want to look into more.
And that would be more, from a health standpoint, right? Because there's no difference morally speaking in raw versus cooked veganism.
Yeah, absolutely.
What are some of the risks that you become aware of? Like what, you know, for instance, the most common one is that vegans can sometimes have a hard time meeting their protein requirements. So maybe talk about that one as well as any other challenges that you've encountered and how you're dealing with them.
I had such a hard time with the protein thing at first, and I went into it like kind of with no plan. It was one of those things where I was just like, right, I'm going to try everything and I'm going to find what I like and what I don't like. And then once I get that part down, I'm going to work on the protein. So out of curiosity, I was still tracking the first month I switched. And I mean, my protein was like 80 grams a day, like almost cut in half. Mm-hmm. And I kind of, you know, freaked out, and I started relying heavily on, I added a protein shake every day. And then I, you know, was for sure eating a bar every day, which was something I was kind of trying to steer away from before I made the switch. So I resorted heavily to like protein powders and bars. And then I found that I hate every single meat substitute. I think they're gross and I don't understand the point. I don't understand why someone who's vegan, who, like, I morally don't want to eat animals, so why would I eat something made to look like a dead animal? But then, you know, as I got more into this and I started making more vegan friends, they explained to me that those products aren't necessarily made for vegans. That, you know, they could be made for somebody that's just trying to lower their meat consumption, so, and who has no interest in being vegan. So I tried everything. I hated everything. And so pretty much right now I just do like tofu and tempeh for the most part. Mm-hmm. But again, I mean, I'm still doing like two shakes a day, a bar every day, tofu. I will do eggs here and there. But I get my eggs sourced from where I know, you know, that I know the chickens are taken care of well. It's actually the massage therapist at my gym. She has a farm. So again, it was just trial and error and, you know, learning what worked for me. But the protein thing's been tough. I mean, even still on a good day, I'm only getting like 120 to 130 grams. But I do think that me not liking any meat substitutes has kind of been a really hard part of this. It's definitely been a challenge. But again, it's what I've done is like the days that I hit like 140 protein, which is where I'd like to be at, I'll go back and look at those days and look at what I did right and then try to mimic it as time goes on.
Do you find yourself eating less whole foods on a vegan diet since because you're trying to meet your protein needs?
Honestly, I'm probably eating way more than I ever have.
That's awesome.
I'm eating healthier than I ever have. That's for sure.
So what have you noticed physically as well as emotionally from the diet? Other than you mentioned your energy level, but what else?
Well, I've been injured, so training's been kind of like hit or miss with stuff with, you know, with my knee, and then I popped a rib out and stuff like that. So the one thing I don't have, because let's see, I made the switch in July, which was after I stopped competing in powerlifting, and I've kind of just been training for like health and recovery and to like feel good. Mm-hmm. So because I'm not training as a competitive athlete right now, I don't know if being vegan has taken a toll on that or not. But I mean, I didn't really lose much strength. I don't think I've lost much muscle. I mean, I think I still look pretty good emotionally. It's hard like eating out with friends and stuff. And then the other thing that's really hard is like, obviously I have a large social media following and people like to put me under a microscope. So anytime I'll post a picture of donuts and people be like, are those vegan? And what's hard for me is the fact that people can't respect that like my dietary decisions are mine and they're for a reason for me. And I've never said, you know, hey, I'm a strict vegan. I'm a, you know, gung-ho diehard vegan. But honestly, what's been really hard is I haven't had a lot of support through it. And I think that's kind of been the biggest emotional hang-up. Mm-hmm. It's just, there's just been times where it's been very hard because other people around me aren't supportive of my diet. Or then I have the food pushers that are constantly trying to get me to eat meat and stuff. So right. I think it's been the hardest emotional part of it is lack of support and understanding from a lot of people.
So, I mean, this is something that I know you have, you talk to your clients about constantly. So how do you deal with that from an emotional and like also tactical standpoint? Because it can be really challenging to constantly be tempted and having your willpower drained by, you know, unsupportive people. So how are you dealing with that?
I have a good sense of humor and I kind of just, anytime anyone gives me shit, I kind of just flip it back around on them for the most part. Luckily the willpower thing's pretty easy for me. I mean, I know I'll never eat meat or chicken again. There have been a handful of times, you know, where I've had fish because that was my only option. I travel the world a lot. Like when I went to Costa Rica with Scott Hisaka, he spent the entire trip trying to get me to eat meat, mm-hmm. you know, or making fun of me and stuff like that. And there was times where I had to have fish because there was no other options. I'm not going to starve. And you know, then I got made fun of and he's like, oh, you broke veg. I'm going to tell everybody you ate fish and just shit like that. And honestly, I just brush it off now. It's not worth getting into it with anyone for, and I just, you know, it's kind of whatever at this point. I think I've gotten enough shit for it where I'm just kind of past the point of caring about getting shit for it. Mm-hmm.
So how does this fit into flexible dieting, if at all? And how are you mixing these new beliefs with what you've done for a long time, which is flexible dieting?
It's all still the same. I mean, I'll still eat donuts and I still eat cereal and I still eat ice cream at night. I guess it's not ice cream anymore, my vegan ice cream and all that stuff. So my diet's still very flexible in the sense that I enjoy all the foods that I love in moderation, which is what flexible dieting's always been about for me. Not so much tracking and hitting macros dead on, but more so like creating a set of guidelines for myself and allowing them to bend here and there. So I mean, my diet's still very flexible. Everything's exactly as it was before. The only difference is that instead of, you know, steak and chicken with dinner, it's tofu or tempeh now. Mm-hmm.
Have your feelings or beliefs about flexible dieting changed at all?
Honestly, if anything, they've gotten like stronger. I've always kind of like before, you know, I got sober and stuff, I always thought everything was like all or nothing or mm-hmm. black and white. And then, you know, I've just learned so much about balance and moderation, but, being vegan, strict vegan is not flexible. And I told myself I was never going to fall into that category of, you know, like making people accommodate my dietary choices or sacrificing my health or energy or hunger because there's no options available for me. Mm-hmm. So again, I don't even like using the word vegan. I like to say I have a plant-based diet. But even still, like I'm a very flexible, realistic vegan. And I think what I've learned from eliminating animal products out of my diet is that flexible dieting got even more flexible for me, almost in a sense, because I didn't corner myself into veganism 100%. Mm-hmm. It's very realistic and very flexible with it.
Yeah, and it kind of makes sense that it would even strengthen your beliefs even more, because veganism is I think usually thought of as such a restrictive diet, but yeah. it makes sense that you're still able to meet certain macronutrients. Like there's nothing that says you can't meet those macronutrient requirements eating vegan sources.
Right.
Is there anything? So, yeah, go ahead.
It's still very flexible. I mean, probably even more so than before. I mean, obviously a couple food options were completely eliminated from my diet, but I still track my macros and I still eat some shit here and there, and I'll still eat French fries if I want French fries. So my diet stayed very flexible. Mm-hmm.
Is there anything else that has changed about your nutrition beliefs in the past couple of years since our first podcast together?
God, that was a long time ago. Mm-hmm. I think that I've started eating healthier in general. I just feel like for the most part, I'm that person. I went and bought like a $600 juicer, and I make juices, you know, multiple times a day now. And I think I've definitely started using food for medicine, so to speak. I have liver disease, as a lot of people know. And the doctor wanted to put me on prednisone earlier this year. And I was like, no, that's out of the question. And that's not something I wanted to go through again. And I just told myself I was going to improve my health through food. And I've been really mindful and trying really hard to, you know, always make healthier and better decisions. So I feel like if anything over the past year, I've taken my health more serious and I've been eating even better than normal. Cause it used to be, you know, I didn't look bad and I was, you know, I lost a lot of weight and stuff after I went up to 190 and got back down to 150. But it used to definitely be, donuts more often. You know, I just ate shittier in general, even though I still hit my macros and I didn't look bad. I was just not as healthy of an eater as I am now.
And why has that changed? Is it solely because you went vegan or has something else in your beliefs changed as well?
It's going to be very corny. I met somebody who makes me want to take better care of myself, who I want to be around a long time for. And I think that meeting Ben has actually really changed about how I look at myself and choose to take care of myself. I value myself more and I take my health a lot more seriously than I used to in the past. So I think that absolutely has something to do with it. Mm-hmm.
And so what are, not to get into the weeds with this, but what are say a couple of the biggest changes you made in that realm, like in terms of longevity, wanting to eat for your long-term health?
I monitor things I used to not monitor before. It used to just be, you know, all about macros. And with how I was training, that worked for me. You know, I was training 3 to 4 hours a day, and that meant that I didn't have to be as serious with my food choices. And what's kind of shifted is I'm training more for health, and I'm eating for health opposed to training to compete in powerlifting 4 to 5 times a year, training to, you know, compete in CrossFit or anything like that. So now that everything's about health, I pay more close attention to all my micros. I'm tracking my sugar more. I'm paying more close attention to my fiber, my sodium, stuff like that. And so that's been a huge indicator. Like my goal for the day, like I'm more concerned about hitting my micros than my macros every day now. Mm-hmm. And that was never something I did before.
Yeah, that's something that Adi and I are trying to pay a lot closer attention to. And that it basically just comes down to, rather than excluding certain foods, just including more healthy foods, which is something that she's taught me. I love that.
Actually, you know what's funny about that is I was listening to the John Berardi podcast that you did with him, and I heard him mention the inclusion opposed to exclusion, and I actually plugged you and him in that little analogy on the last nutrition podcast we did.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, and I mentioned that, and that spoke to me huge. Like, it should never be about excluding stuff. It should be more about including stuff, and if you're, you know, mindfully and actively trying to include more healthy foods, you're just going to have to portion control the not so healthy ones a little bit better.
Right. So talking about your coaching a little bit, you've worked with so many different athletes on their physiques that are, you know, that are either trying to look better naked or they're trying to just create a better relationship with food.
Right.
What are the most consistent factors of the people that are really successful with you and those that end up failing or giving up?
The biggest thing with us is honesty. The clients that are just, you know, wear their hearts on their sleeves and they're very honest with us all the time, it allows us to help them more. I think so many people get afraid, you know, whether they've had bad past experiences with coaches or whatever, to feel like failures. So they're not always completely open with us about what's going on. That gets really hard. So the people that come to us every week and are open and honest, and then the people that try to understand what we're teaching them, opposed to just, you know, like leaning on us as like a crutch almost, the clients that like start doing their own research and, you know, look elsewhere and read other books on nutrition and that are actually like motivated to make a change and learn this skill go so much farther than the people who sign up, never read the reading material, and then, you know, expect us to give them some sort of like magic macro calculation that'll just make weight melts off of them. And it always comes down to you're going to get out of it what you put in. And the clients that put in the most work and are always honest with us, and the clients that never skip a check-in, always go the farthest. Mm-hmm. Even if you've had the shittiest week ever, I always tell my clients, I'd rather you have the shittiest week ever and just tell us about it than skipping it because you think like nothing good's going to come of a check-in.
Right, because that's really where the magic is. Something that Adi constantly talks about is like anyone can give you that initial set of macros, right? Like the magic is not in that initial set of macros. In fact, that initial set you can just get from a calculator online. But yeah, it's that coaching on your behaviors and habits and all of the in between that really makes a great coach and sets people up for success.
Yeah, and I mean, I always tell people, I'm like, you're not paying us to tell you what macros to eat. Like most, you know, that's the easy part. They're paying us for the accountability and the support and the community, the community we've created. And the people who are just, you know, open and honest, they go so much farther.
Mm-hmm. So I want to switch gears a little bit. I want to talk about business for a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah. In all of your businesses, one thing that's always stood out to me is the quality. So, you know, the products, packaging, media, everything. Where does that mindset come from? Have you always been like that? Or what, you know, how did you come to hold quality in such high regard?
Yeah, I've always kind of been about quality. I've never been a cheap person, ever. I think I get that from my dad. My dad was the guy that would always, like, dive deep into safety ratings on cars with me when it came time to like get a car. And he just always, you know, seemed to teach me about quality and all that stuff. So I think I get that from him. We're very good about it with, you know, with all the apparel, we check every individual garment when it comes in before we fully bag it, just because I care about that quality control and we pull anything that's not up to our standards. And yeah, I don't know. I've always been huge on first impressions too. And what I want when somebody gets their LO Supply Co. or Donuts and Deadlifts package in the mail is their first impression of it to be good. And I want them to be excited about it and, you know, to be excited to open their package and put their shirt on. And I can't tell you how many times I personally have ordered from a company and the shirt just comes, you know, balled up and shoved into a bag. And I'm just kind of like, it's whatever. I mean, it's just the t-shirt. But I always have remembered that. And I've always remembered when I've gotten something that's packaged cool or looks cool. That stuff is always just oddly to me. So I think it's carried over into my businesses.
Yeah, I think it's when you receive one that's like kind of balled up and there's not much attention given to it. It's not like you think anything, or personally, like I don't think anything negative, but I really just don't think anything at all. Right. And what you're doing by sending something memorable is that they are instantly going to remember you next time they're looking for a shirt. They're going to remember how, you know, receiving it made them feel. And in business, that's everything, right? The way that we make people feel.
Yeah. And one thing that's really cool that we did with Elo is we got like tissue paper made, and we actually tissue paper everything up and put a sticker on it and put it in like a nice box. So with Elo, we're like, packaging has been everything. And it's so cool, like, to get the compliments on it, because people notice like that. Like, you know, people, especially with Elo with a higher price point, you know, someone buys an $80 windbreaker, you bet your ass I want it to look nice when you get it. So that's one thing that's always gone into everything I do is quality. I don't half-ass things.
So you've got, I mean, a million different things going on, a million different irons in the fire. What kind of things stress you out, and how do you keep all of that together? And how do you ensure that all of those businesses are continuing to thrive despite, you know, your own personal stress and challenges?
I'm one of those people who I absorb other people's feelings. It's one of my biggest character flaws. Like if somebody who's close to me is, you know, having a bad day, I kind of absorb that and I can read into it. And then my mind automatically goes to, how can I make this person's day better? And one thing I've learned about everything I do is the happier my staff is, the more it carries over into business. And one thing that really stresses me out is I tend to try really hard to make everybody happy all the time. And sometimes it costs me my own happiness because I get so stressed worrying about other people, I forget to worry about myself. And that's been like a huge problem for me, but it's something I've been actively working on, you know, the past 6 months, all that stuff kind of came to the forefront in January. And I realized I needed to work on myself as much as I was working on everybody else in my life. And so now it's really good. Like we have a really good team in place, and, everyone's, you know, happy and likes their job. So when everything's good, I'm good. But what I start to notice is if someone's having a bad day or having a hard time, or I can see one of my employees like going through personal stuff at home, that's what stresses me out. Mm-hmm. It's always like the people part of my business that stresses me out, because I care so much about everybody involved.
So talking about your team, do you believe more on like working on your weaknesses or bringing out your strengths and having everyone kind of working in their strengths?
I personally, for my team, try to bring out their strengths. There's character flaws Bryface will never possess, and Chloe will never possess, and Kels and Q and everybody. And I understand that. And I think for a while I was trying to do the work on the weaknesses thing, and then I realized there's no point in changing anybody because everyone has their strengths. So now it's been more of a bring out everybody's strengths type deal and delegate appropriately.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I've noticed for me, it was really hard to learn this concept because, I think we're always taught like to bring up our weakness, right? If we're bad at math in school, then we better spend more time working on math. Or in CrossFit, it's literally all about eliminating your weaknesses. If you suck at muscle ups, you got to spend more time working on muscle ups. But in business, and a lot of teams for that matter, spending a bunch of extra time working on your weaknesses means that you're not building up those strengths as much. But if you position everyone so that they're only doing what they're best at, A, they're going to be happier, and B, they're going to be way more productive. And then that equals much more collaboration and a better product overall.
Right. And that's kind of what's happened with, you know, it's happened everywhere in all areas. Like even with the nutrition coaching and stuff, like I have Ashley Beaver and Kelsey, you know, two full-time nutrition coaches, and there's things Kelsey's better at and there's things Ashley's better at and more comfortable with. Like, and for example, like Ashley's gotten really good at, you know, reverse dieting people and improving people's like caloric thresholds and stuff. So it's rather than focus so much on trying to like teach Kelsey the reverse side and all that. It's kind of one of those things like I let Ash handle it because she enjoys it and she's good at it. And Kelsey knows how to do it, but Kelsey's also a little bit better with like performance stuff. So it's been one of those things where rather than wasting a bunch of time trying to get Kelsey and Ashley each individually comfortable with the things they're not as great at as other things, I focus more on letting them do what they really enjoy doing, and I delegate athletes appropriately to them based on that. Mm-hmm. And it just seems like it makes everybody enjoy their job more.
Exactly. And they really appreciate that because they don't feel like if you're constantly working on your weaknesses, you can feel like you're never good enough.
Right. Yeah, exactly. That's kind of been how it is with the gym and with the apparel and everything too. Like we've kind of just found a really good fit for everybody right now and things are going really well.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
What's the biggest mistake you've made in the past year that you wouldn't mind sharing?
Oh man. Honestly, it's money stuff, financial stuff, paying closer attention to my personal finances. After I got out of college, I was like crippled by student loan debt. Mm-hmm. And then I went into default for a year and it pretty much just destroyed my credit. And then I didn't do anything about it literally until this year. And I remember going to the credit union last year and sitting down with her and looking at my credit and looking at just everything over the years. And she explained to me that when you make money, you care less about your credit. Mm-hmm. You know, people who make enough money, they don't need to worry about credit. You don't need credit cards, stuff like that. So she explained that to me and, you know, like once upon a time, I didn't care about buying a house or anything like that. But now that's like a huge priority for me. Like I can't wait to buy a house with Ben. And meeting Ben was another thing where I realized I needed to like become more of a financially responsible adult and I had to fix my credit. And so one thing I really, really regretted this year and last year was not doing that sooner because it's important. And there's ways to fix it and it takes a ton of work. And it's stressful and it's a really big bummer at first when you're fixing your credit. But now it's like one of the best things I ever did for myself.
Do you find yourself looking more like long-term because of that? And not only in finances, but also like health and stuff like that, relationships because of that experience?
Oh yeah, absolutely. 100%.
So you still find time to travel and enjoy yourself a ton, despite being the busiest person I know. Why is that so important to you?
Travel was a huge part of my sobriety. Prior to getting sober, all my traveling was party trips. Before I got sober, I'd gone to Mexico a handful of times. I'd gone to Europe for a month once, and I'd gone to Australia. But every time I was traveling, it was like all about partying. And I missed the experience of actually traveling. And so I got sober and then we had a trip to Amsterdam planned. Obviously it was planned prior to getting sober and I was like terrified to go. Mm-hmm. And my mom told me not to go. She's like, she thought I was going to relapse, but I went and I went, you know, went to Europe for a month and actually like saw stuff instead of just getting shit face wasted and doing a bunch of drugs the whole time I was traveling. And that trip that I went on 2 weeks after getting sober was like, I think it saved my sobriety. I think had I not done that, I wouldn't have remained sober. And that trip alone was just so eye-opening to me. And I realized how valuable that other people's perspectives are all over the world. And mm-hmm. So it just became a priority. And now I try to do like 3 international trips a year or so. And every time I travel, I just learn something new about myself and I come back so refreshed. And it's probably the most important component of my life.
So tell me more about, tell me about your decision to start Elo, right? It seems related to this.
Yeah, obviously last summer, a lot changed in my life, my personal life. And, I made it up in my head that I was a bad person and that I didn't deserve all my success. And I went through kind of like a really dark time early last summer. We started backpacking all the time, Chloe and I did. And there's just something about nature, man. It just like gives me so much inner peace. And when you go out to the middle of nowhere with no cell service and you can't be distracted by all the noise that's on our phones, whether it's text messaging, emails, work, social media, any of that stuff, and you're just like faced to be with yourself you just can learn so much about yourself. So all the backpacking started, and you know, we were going almost every weekend and hiking and being outside, and it just did so much for me mentally and brought me so far. And so basically, when I got Chloe into backpacking, we were having a really hard time finding stuff that fit her because of her build. So we were talking about, why don't we create, you know, outdoorsy apparel for athletically built people, because there's nothing out there. I mean, like, when you look at people who backpack and hike and climb and cycle and stuff like that, they tend to be pretty lean, not a ton of muscle.
They're vegans.
Yeah, exactly. Just a bunch of hippies. So basically what we decided to do was create something for athletes outdoor-wise. We didn't really know what we were doing, so we started it back in June or July, and we didn't actually do our first release till December. But what we did, you know, over the summer is we made a list of things that don't exist that we thought should exist. Mm-hmm. And that list got longer and longer. And we started looking into, you know, manufacturing and all that type of stuff. So ELO is an acronym. The Donuts and Deadlifts motto is Eat, Lift, Live. So we just added outdoor to the end of that to get ELO.
Nice.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Eat, Lift, Live, Outdoors, the acronym for ELO. And yeah, I mean, it's been a total hobby, and it's been organic, and it's been slow, which is something I'm not used to. Mm-hmm. So it's been 100% like enjoyable, because Donuts and Deadlifts is work. Like, I need my salary from Donuts and Deadlifts. Chloe needs her salary from Donuts and Deadlifts. Anyone that works for Donuts and Deadlifts, that's their only job. So Donuts and Deadlifts is 100%. I look at it as work. Mm-hmm. I don't follow that way. It's just kind of like a fun side hobby for now. And that's kind of how I hope it stays. Mm-hmm.
That is awesome. Of all the places you've traveled, what's the coolest one that you think people would find surprising?
Surprising.
Which one Hungary. Was most surprised? Oh, Hungary? Okay. Why so?
Yeah. I don't know. I knew I had always wanted to go to Budapest because I had heard, like, I'd heard about the thermal baths, and that was kind of like the reason I wanted to go. So I just planned like a quick 5-day trip there, thinking I was just going to, like, you know, go to the thermal baths, cruise around. I went by myself. Mm-hmm. It's just like the most beautiful city and the nicest people. And there's so much to do in the architecture. Like, it was one of those places where I was just completely blown away by it, how beautiful it is. That's and awesome. I think a lot of people, when they hear, like, Hungary, they're kind of like, what's in Hungary?
Yeah.
So, yeah, Budapest was one of those places that just blew me away.
What place has the best food, vegan or non?
We ate really well in Cape Town, South Africa. Mm-hmm. They eat really healthy. And they have lots of, like, obscure, I mean, obviously I didn't try any of them, but they have, like, lots of, like, obscure, like, gamey meat. Like, you can have, like, zebra and stuff like that, which obviously I didn't get into. Mm-hmm. Yeah, if I wasn't a vegan, that definitely would have been something I would have been interested in trying. But I was just blown away by the food, the quality there, and how good everything was.
Of all of your attributes that you think contribute to your success, what do you think most contributes to your success? Which one?
My transparency and my willingness to admit when I'm wrong. I used to be one of those people that always had to be right, and that, you know, all changed over the years, and I can always admit fault and always admit when I'm wrong and when I fucked up. That's a big one. And I just always try to be 100% transparent.
Where does that come from?
Honestly, I don't know. Cause my dad's never been that way. I mean, my mom's always been a really genuine, good person, but I'm not really sure where it came from. I think I've just learned over the years from the people who have been in my life and everything. Cause it's definitely a new thing. I don't think I used to be that way. Mm-hmm. So I'm not really sure. I think it's just kind of like how I've evolved over the year. I think I know what I value in other people. And I try to mimic that in myself.
Right. And that's also a huge part of recovery, right? Rigorous honesty.
Yeah, absolutely. Which has also been a really big work in progress. But the honesty thing too. I mean, that's, again, I wasn't the most honest person a couple years back. And I think obviously the plagiarism thing happened, and I had to come forward about that and be really open and honest about that mistake I did. And when I saw how many people were quick to forgive me because of how honest I was about it,
right?
I just realized how important honesty is, even if it's, you know, gonna be hard or hurt and stuff like that. People just value it.
Right. And hiding it, like, we think we're hiding it from people, but especially those closest to us, they know what's going on. And yeah, even if they don't know exactly what's going on, people can feel when we're being dishonest. So just being vulnerable, being transparent about things, that's what makes people trust us in general. And it's what makes us feel good about ourselves.
Yeah. And once you kind of like get over the fear of honesty, because I think people are just afraid at first, they're afraid of hurting people or hurting themselves. And once you get over that fear and you see all the good that can come from it, I mean, it's like the most freeing feeling to feel like you never have to be dishonest anymore.
Mm-hmm. Well, all right. That's all I got. I really appreciate it, Chrissy. This was great. Where can people find out more about what you've got going on and keep up with you?
Chrissy Mae Cagney on Instagram and Twitter, and Black Iron Gym on YouTube. We've been doing the YouTube thing, which has been a fun experience.
Hell yeah, that's so much work.
Yeah, but it's good. It gets help whatever I face. It's been good for me to get, because I'm a very awkward person and I still have a hard time with public speaking. So it's been really good for me to like feel comfortable behind a camera.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Well, all right. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me again.
Talk to you soon.
Sounds good.